Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 326.
This week on the podcast, another whistleblower steps forward, and by now it seems like any human being with a television is qualified to be the next one.
And in Trump's America, you can solve a mystery using common sense. So look, everybody who you suspect was on the Ukraine call was probably on the Ukraine call.
Plus, Joe Biden is now losing the treason conversation too, because losing on policy wasn't fun enough.
And Trump makes Twitter plans to impeach Mitt Romney and Nancy Pelosi right back, using a little-known constitutional amendment entitled the Alternative Facts Loophole.
Plus, third-quarter fundraising numbers are in, and poor frontrunner Joe Biden's pool is already maxing out.
And Donald Trump doesn't need your stupid opinion on Syria. He's got Erdogan's.
As we have stated strongly before, and just to reiterate, in our great and unmatched wisdom, we'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
We're coming at you a day late because of Disneyland or something. I don't know what's going on.
It's gay days, obviously.
Said sure, whatever. We'll do it Monday.
Yeah.
We're going to start with not any real news, but a discussion of the greatest Donald Trump tweet that's ever been tweeted.
And there's been so many.
Really, any time, like, his great and unmatched wisdom in this circumstance.
This is up there with the stable genius.
Yeah. There's a lot of great capitalization in this tweet as well.
Sure.
So I'm going to read the tweet, and then I'm going to tell you what he's capitalized. As I have stated strongly before, and just to reiterate, if Turkey does anything that, in my great and unmatched wisdom, I consider to be off limits, I will totally destroy and obliterate the economy of Turkey. I've done it before. They must, with Europe and others, watch over, and then there's a thread that goes on. I'm not reading the whole thread to you.
We're not
too much
involved in that.
But the economy of Turkey is, for some reason, capitalized as if that's a proper noun. So, for some reason, Turkey's economy is not just an economy. It's titled The Economy of Turkey. And this is so weird anyway, because he's, like, super in bed with Erdogan right now. Like, I mean, we're about to talk about some decisions he's made in Syria that would lead anyone with a brain to believe that he's now on Turkey's dictator side when it comes to that border skirmish. So, look, Donald Trump has a lot of great and unmatched wisdom. A lot of it is made up. Most of it is made up. Yeah, a lot of it's in his head.
Yeah.
I also don't know about the last time that he destroyed the economy of Turkey. But I'm curious to hear more about that. And maybe we will, because we're about to be involved in a lot of exciting hearings having to do with his dealings abroad.
Yeah.
Because now a second whistleblower has stepped forward.
Yes.
The lawyer for the first whistleblower now says that they're representing a second client who actually has firsthand knowledge of some of the claims that were made in the initial whistleblower report.
Yes.
Someone who worked in the intelligence community and has not filed their complaint, but is protected by the same whistleblower laws because...
Right, you don't have to technically file a complaint because he did speak with the intelligence community's inspector general.
Right.
So he's basically he's officially on record as saying this, so he can be protected. He just didn't go... He just didn't do this sort of, same thing where
he didn't write a report.
Six-page report.
Right. Yeah. And then there's some confusion about whether there's a third whistleblower. Either the New York Times has reported the second whistleblower as if it's a different whistleblower, but is the same person.
Right.
Or there's another whistleblower.
Because they reported first, I believe, actually. I think, on Friday, they reported that there was a second intelligence official who had more direct knowledge that was, going to be coming forward. And then on Sunday, we heard from the lawyer of the first whistleblower that he was representing a second whistleblower. So, and he did not know whether this was the same person or not because he was asked specifically.
So we have no confirmation about whether the Times is talking about the same person or not.
Right.
Here's the thing. At this point, we could all be the whistleblower. I can tell you a lot of treasonous things that Donald Trump has done on television. As a human being with eyes and a television and a Twitter account, I mean, I could be whistleblowing right now.
Yeah, you don't need much more.
You don't need much.
No.
We don't need to have been on private phone calls because we have been on television and Twitter and watched him do treasonous things just live.
Yeah, exactly.
So at this point, I feel like second, third, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
We're all whistleblowers now.
Exactly. This is kind of a big deal for the reason that we stated, just in terms that they have direct knowledge.
Right.
Because one of the things that the administration has been attempting to do is to sort of discredit this whistleblower. They don't even know who it is, so that is making it tricky for them, but they're trying it anyway.
Yeah, sure.
But one of the ways that they have been doing that is by saying that this person did not have direct knowledge.
Right.
Even though everything that was in the report has sort of, like, been borne out by the transcript
that
the administration released itself.
They, like, verified half of what was in the report for no reason to avoid having the whistleblower report come out. Like, what was so weird about that is they could have just released the whistleblower report and not released the transcript. And then we could all pretend there's no evidence. But now we have evidence. It doesn't make any sense. But also, with the second whistleblower having firsthand knowledge, that makes it harder to use their other complaint about the first whistleblower, which is
that they just didn't know what they were talking about.
Right.
Right.
So this is all very exciting because it feels like whistleblowers are probably going to start coming out of the woodwork, because how many people have been on a call like this with Donald Trump at this point? Everyone.
Yeah.
America. Anyone in America.
Yeah.
So if you are considering becoming a whistleblower, keep in mind that you are protected.
Yes.
That you, as someone who doesn't work in the intelligence community, might not know the proper way to go about it, but that also you are protected by the fact that we all have television proof of a lot of this activity. So don't worry about it. Meanwhile, we have a lot of questions about a lot of cabinet officials in the Trump administration coming out of this impeachment inquiry.
There's been some weirdness around Rick Perry.
A lot
recently.
There's always been so much weirdness around Rick Perry. And this has his poor memory has continued to serve us in many ways. Because
He wasn't on the call.
Right. He's one of the few people that actually wasn't on the call who didn't lie when he said he wasn't on the call.
He may have somehow initiated the call.
The call might have been his fault.
Right.
He might have been personally responsible for the call.
Yeah.
But he wasn't on it.
Because there was a report this weekend that because Trump had a call with House Republicans, basically just sort of like to get everybody on the same page.
Right.
And he said on this call, not
what their story was going to be.
He said, not a lot of people know this, but I didn't even want to make the call. The only reason I made the call was because Rick Perry asked me to. Something about an LNG, which is liquefied natural gas plant. And then he also went on to say more of this will be coming out in the next few days.
Here's a thing about Donald Trump, though, that is one of the few, like, usually he'll just tell you what's going on. So you don't have to do a lot of digging.
Yeah.
In this kind of situation, though, I fully believe that he would blame anyone for the call
not,
you know, Rick Perry, anyone. Person who he came into contact with recently, whose name he has seen on Fox News, could have been responsible for this Ukraine call on some level.
Yeah.
Now, it might also be that Rick Perry was personally responsible for the Ukraine call. It's hard to know.
It might be. Yes.
Right.
Especially, like, if you were to tell me that, like, Rick Perry was somehow getting involved in liquefied natural gas nonsense in Ukraine.
Super right.
Like, that's it.
That's clear.
That's what he was up to.
That's,
exactly.
That's when you can use common sense.
Right.
He's mystery
Texas,
solving.
He's the Secretary of Energy or whatever the hell it is that he is.
Right.
But we also found out that Rick Perry, I don't think there's been an official announcement about this, but Rick Perry is leaving the administration. He's
just
leaving his post.
For no reason related to any of this. Don't worry about it, guys.
He's one of the longest cabinet members.
That's because no one has talked about him since he took that position. Everyone else has had one moment of scrutiny, and that's been enough.
Yeah.
This is his moment of scrutiny. It's not working out well. He might as well step down now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's impressive to have borne out as many years
as
he has under the Trump administration so far, but it's because no one's been talking about him.
Right.
He's just been out there trying to make phone calls with Ukraine so that a liquefied natural gas deal can go through.
Yeah, exactly. Because he was actually mentioned in the initial whistleblower complaint, although briefly. But after Zelensky won election in Ukraine, apparently Trump told Mike Pence to cancel his trip to the inauguration and that Rick Perry should go instead.
Right. Well, so Perry had something to do with a coal export deal in Ukraine. So he had relationships in Ukraine.
Right, exactly.
And he'd also been working closely with some State Department officials that were based in Ukraine.
Including Kurt Volker.
Right. And so, and including people that are about to get swept into...
Right. Yes, exactly.
That are about to testify.
Yeah.
So you're about to hear Gordon Sondland and Kurt Volker's names a lot, if you haven't already been hearing them a lot. And those are all people that Perry worked closely with.
Right.
And he has also met with Zelensky himself.
Right. When he went over there on that very trip, actually, what he has been trying to do is, like, push contracts from this huge Ukrainian national gas company to people he's been friendly with.
Right.
Specifically, you know, oil guys in Texas. Because he went and urged Zelensky to fire the company's advisory board members and then implied that these two Texas businessmen would be good choices to run the new
port. Everything's above the board, though, guys. Don't worry about it. That is certainly not... It's not shady behavior at all. No. It's just what you have to do as the energy secretary.
Right. And not at all weird that he's announced that he's leaving his post.
Not at all weird. No. No, that has nothing to do with anything. No, he probably just wants to spend more time with his family.
I'm sure he does.
Metrosexual glasses. So while none of this necessarily implies that he was there to push them investigating Hunter Biden.
Right.
It does imply that he was there to push for friendly business arrangements to personal friends of his and Trump's that have nothing to do with the interests of the U.S. government.
Correct.
So he was up to shenanigans.
Yes.
And then we have Mike Pompeo, who initially lied and said he was not on the call. Then it turned out he was on the call. Last week, he was subpoenaed by three House committees, Foreign Affairs, Intelligence, and Oversight, Elijah Cummings, Adam Schiff, and Maxine Waters, for some documents related to Ukraine. And then they told him they're deposing a few State Department officials, to which he freaked out on Tuesday and said that this was a crazy timetable and that, you know, that they were intimidating and bullying State Department officials and calling just to get their depositions. Then on Wednesday, he had to admit that he had actually been on the phone call that he had initially said that he had not been on. And then on Friday, he did not meet his subpoena deadline with the House to produce some of the documents he was owed them. And so this... He's totally innocent, though, guys. This is just all a misunderstanding, obviously.
Right.
Then on Saturday, he told reporters that they had given a letter that was a, quote, initial response to the document request, whatever that means, which probably means they were just like, fuck you. And then the Congress, the congressional committees are going to be like, no, fuck you.
Yeah.
And now there's a new deadline of October
4th. We're at the very beginning of what is going to very quickly probably turn into a constitutional crisis.
Correct.
Because... This is the beginning of the missed subpoenas.
Yes.
Because the White House now itself has also been subpoenaed.
Yes.
At the end of last
week. Well, and this was a crisis we could have seen coming because Trump loves to not reply to a subpoena request if he doesn't feel like it.
Right.
And also, this is what you do when you're a dictator.
Sure.
Is you're just like, oh, no, the laws don't apply to me.
Right.
No, you can't subpoena me. I have the power to not be subpoenaed. I'm the president.
Right.
So all of these administration officials are going to pretend like for some reason subpoenas have no power over them.
That's right.
And then we're gonna have to figure out what to do.
Yeah.
The House is not gonna have to figure anything out. No. The House has also subpoenaed the White House Budget Office and the Pentagon.
Yes.
As part of the probe. And these are all for documents related to the question of whether his decision to end security aid to Ukraine right before making that quid pro quo call was linked. So whether this was part of a strategy to have the Ukrainians need something from him when he got on the phone with them so that he could make them investigate conspiracy theories.
Right.
So those agencies have until October 15th to hand over a bunch of stuff.
Right, which they won't.
Which they won't.
Yeah.
So mid-October, it's going to be exciting out there.
Yeah.
As if things aren't exciting enough. Mid-October, which Oddly is also enough, when the debate...
That's next week.
That's next week. And also, it's going to be kind of exciting because there's also going to be a Democratic debate amidst all of this.
Yeah.
So, I mean... Really, there couldn't be more happening, all of which is terrible.
Yeah.
Trump has also been using this time to enact his I know you are, but what am I defense.
Totally.
He's now calling to impeach everyone.
Right.
Now, you can't impeach anyone but the president, just to be clear. You can impeach the vice president or the president.
Yeah.
You can't impeach a senator. You can't impeach a congressman.
You can, like, recall them or whatever.
Yeah, you can recall them. You can expel them.
Yeah, but Mitt Romney is, like, basically, like, the leading Republican voice.
Well, it's the only Republican voice.
Right. That's why he's leading.
That's right. So Donald Trump has taken to him on Twitter. He tweeted, "I'm hearing that the great people of Utah," also capitalized like a proper noun, "are considering their vote for the pompous senator," capitalized like a proper noun, "Mitt Romney, to be a big mistake. I agree. He is a fool who is playing right into the hands of the do-nothing Democrats," also a proper noun. Hashtag impeach Mitt Romney.
Mm.
This is a man who really gets the Constitution.
Yeah, that immediately drew questions on Twitter from people who were curious as to whether the senator could be impeached. No.
No, the answer is no.
Yeah, can't be. Only since 1789, the Senate has only expelled 15 members, and that was mostly people who were supporting the Confederacy during the Civil War. So it's not going
to
be happening.
And listen, I'm no Mitt Romney fan.
No.
I'm not here to tell you that I think Mitt Romney is doing a glorious job in the Senate. I am here to tell you that if people in Utah want an incredibly wealthy idiot representing them, Donald Trump can't impeach him.
Right. There's more chance that 2/3 of the Senate is going to vote to impeach Donald Trump than there are to impeach Mitt Romney, because I don't even think Democrats would vote to impeach Mitt Romney when he's like the,
when he's
only,
the only Republican the only voice Republican. Making any sense right now.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Donald Trump also at one point said that he was going to impeach Nancy Pelosi, which is another person he can't impeach.
Right.
There, he has a list of people he'd like to impeach because they have said they want to impeach him.
So good.
It's too amazing. Meanwhile, though, Joe Biden is, like, really wrapped up in this Ukraine scandal in a way that has not been helpful to his campaign. And he, like, has not come up with a strong response to it at all.
This is the Hillary's emails.
Yeah, it's the Hillary's emails of the Biden campaign. And he has somehow just, like, failed as the man who is running exclusively on how he's the best person to take on Donald Trump, has failed to come up with any reason why we should believe that he is up to the task of even taking on this minor side argument about his son.
Right.
I mean, it's embarrassing.
It's crazy. There's like this really, I would recommend reading this whole article in the New York Times because it's actually interesting and we're not even covering half of it here. But it was basically sort of like about kind of just broadly the state of the Biden campaign, but really sort of like framing it around the response to this whole Ukraine situation right now, because all of his advisors have been debating ever since this came up how to respond to this. Whether should they go on a fierce counterattack? Biden, I think, initially wanted to like stick to a set of policy arguments he'd been planning to roll out during that time period. and all of this was sort of like set against the backdrop of his sagging poll numbers and fundraising numbers, right, which we're going to get to in a second. But they just sort of like couldn't figure out what it was that they wanted to do. Like the entire the campaign was just sort of like equivocating and like couldn't wrap their head around what it was they wanted to do. And they sort of ultimately got so stressed about it that they like lashed out at the DNC for not doing anything specifically to push back on Biden's behalf, because the RNC was running those insane ads about this. And the DNC was sort of like, we're going to keep speaking out against Trump, but we're not running commercials for the Biden campaign. No, like that's not
what
we're doing.
This is literally
what
got them into trouble last time.
The last time. So they're definitely not going to do it this time.
Yeah. No, it's also, so the one thing that they did try to do is Biden decided he was going to give a speech on Wednesday in Reno.
Right, they finally came up with a plan.
That was going to be a big speech rebuking Donald Trump.
Right.
But the problem was it was too late on the East Coast when he did it.
Right.
And then it got lost by the next morning. Donald Trump had stolen the news cycle back, because that's what he does best.
Yeah.
And so there's been a bunch of Democrats that are really angry that the Bidens are not pursuing this more aggressively. They've been sort of behind closed doors pleading for the campaign to come out more aggressively to confront Trump on this issue. And like it's kind of weird because this could have been an opportunity for him to like be kind of a strong foe.
So many people were just sort of like, this is your chance to be in
David Plouffe being one of them. I didn't even read that note.
I know, right?
Me and David Plouffe understand strategy together.
He said he was mystified. That's Obama's former campaign manager. And he said, Mr. Biden should use this moment and become Trump's opponent. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
And that's it. This is the time that he had to be going one-on-one. And like also, I think what concerns everyone so much here is you sort of alluded to it, but like this is obviously what a campaign against Donald Trump is going to look like.
Yeah.
And Joe Biden is a person who is running on nothing other than being the best person to take on Donald Trump.
He doesn't
want
you to know what his platform is because it's mediocre at best.
Right. You don't want to know.
You don't want to. He doesn't always know.
He doesn't want you to know,
is.
And you would prefer to not know.
And
anyway.
He sometimes doesn't know himself. So everyone on every level is mystified about what his campaign platform is. So his platform is just, I'm the best guy to take on Donald Trump.
Right. Based on.
And so nothing.
Clearly.
He's been handed a golden opportunity to be the best guy to take on Donald Trump because he is the only candidate who is tied directly to the scandal that is going to take down Donald Trump.
Yeah. And look, I get it. He thinks it's garbage because
there is
literally no, of course it's garbage. There's no evidence that there's any there.
No.
Like, and I get
it's,
it. So
it's
but
problematic
like,
because
it doesn't matter.
It ties, it shows that all the children of the aristocracy are benefiting from this system.
Right.
You know, that's part of the problem is that it makes him part of the swamp.
Yep.
And Donald Trump is part of this swamp that I'm talking about, the aristocracy swamp.
Right.
And it's tough to combat in that sense because he doesn't have the ability to say, oh, I'm different from this guy. I'm a guy who's about public service.
Yeah.
While his son is busy being part of the Ukraine swamp, which is a never-ending swamp. It's like it's quicksand.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he has not shown that he is in any way up to the task of taking on Donald Trump when they do come for him.
Right.
And this is a dumb charge compared to what Donald Trump's being charged with.
But you
with.
Can't wait two weeks to make a late night speech and then expect it to go away.
No, you certainly can't. But there's so much they don't get about the media cycle.
It's true.
And they're scared because Warren is polling really well and out fundraising them.
Yes.
And they, I think, like many a Democratic campaign before them, literally didn't take her seriously enough.
No. There's supposedly, that was one of the other things that was interesting about this article, was that there's a lot of hand-wringing about what to do about her. And I think you're absolutely right. But there's a few things that are making them nervous about her, besides the fact that she's just, like, crushing it on all levels.
Right. besides her bestness.
They have been telling all of their donors that they have a similar firewall to sort of like the firewall that Hillary Clinton had, which was sort of like started in South Carolina. It went through the South. It was that she could sort of like play on a broader level on Super Tuesday. And so they are sort of like selling that story to everyone that like they're going to win big in South Carolina. And he is still ahead big in South Carolina. Although she won South Carolina by like 60 points. He's not ahead that much either. So when you're getting into a delegate battle, like this is already... is not a great
also Super Tuesday looks different than it used to.
Super Tuesday looks different for him. And the other thing is too is that we are sort of like now living in a world where at least some polling has her ahead in Iowa and New Hampshire and in Nevada. So you're looking at a potential situation where you get to the fourth contest with Super Tuesday right after it, where the perception is that you are just a giant loser. And the thing, and that also, in contrast to Clinton, is very different because Clinton won by, like, ultimately,
she
it was a delegate
Iowa.
Tie in Iowa. And she,
she lost in New Hampshire, but New Hampshire is the state bordering her opponents.
Right, and then she won Nevada.
Right.
So she got to South Carolina having a tie and a win under her belt.
And she also had an opponent who really had not been able to introduce his platform to South Carolina very effectively. This is a different year also because voters in the South are going to be more familiar with the progressive left.
Yeah, well, and we talked about it last week, actually, about how her poll numbers with African-Americans are just, like, have tripled since they started
polling
them.
No, I mean, it's
like
a largely when you are dealing with these sort of New England Democrats, it's often a familiarity issue.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, like, there's only so much you can do to familiarize yourself with a giant state when you're running in the whole country or whatever. But it is going to be different than it was in 2016, because in 2016, a candidate like Bernie Sanders was, like, unheard of in the South.
Yeah.
That seemed like a lunatic, crazy person idea. And then you have these people who have sort of deep roots in the South, politically speaking.
Yeah.
And like, of course, there's no contest there. This is not really the same situation, because there's like 100 people running.
Right.
And all of them are siphoning votes off of Biden in the South.
Right.
Because Biden's just not making any sense anywhere. And then on top of that, those voters have had 4 years to learn what the progressive platform is. And maybe that's not going to appeal to all of them, but it certainly is going to appeal to more people than it would have before they knew what it was. So there's a little hand-wringing about that, in part, I think, because they're making the sort of classic mistakes that, like, sort of mainline DNC candidates make. They're sort of following the Clinton playbook in a way, in a very different year than the Clinton playbook even worked as far as it worked.
Right.
Because Clinton was still only running, really, against Bernie Sanders.
Right.
She didn't have, like, 100 candidates running against her. And then, also, she was the only known entity in that race in, like, half the country.
Yeah.
Whereas I think people, you know, Bernie Sanders wasn't a legitimate candidate until so late in the game that happened. Of course he didn't spend much time in South Carolina. What did he think he was going to get to South Carolina?
I
mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
So this is not good for him.
Right. The other thing that has them a little bit concerned about Elizabeth Warren, and this is our next story.
Yeah.
But Bernie Sanders had a heart attack last week.
It's not great. It's not what you want.
That's not great. But part of Biden's plan, and they're not necessarily shy about it. I mean, they're not going to tell you that they're, you know, worried politically about Bernie Sanders' heart attack, but like, they're not going to tell you publicly that, but they might privately. But part of their winning plan is that the two of those two siphon votes from each other.
Right.
And if one of them is having heart attacks, then that plan sort of maybe
falls apart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on Tuesday of last week, Sanders apparently had to ask for a chair during one of his actual campaign events and like sit down. He finished the event, left the event, and they took him to urgent care, and then we found out the next day that he had had surgery to put for stints. Which at the time everyone was just sort of like, well, most men have to have stints put in their heart when they're in their 60s.
Right.
So like go Bernie. Like now he's got cleared arteries and he's just like going to go for it, you know?
Then we found out it had been a heart attack.
But then we found out that it had been a heart attack, which is not great for a few different reasons, because it seemed as though the campaign was potentially trying to cover it up until he until the doctor said something and he left the hospital and, like, looked okay.
Right.
And it was also a Friday, so I think they probably were hoping that it would, that news would just die.
Right.
To a degree, because that's when you release news that you want to die.
Correct.
Although I would contend that it doesn't really work like that any longer. But
not in this cycle. Not in the world
in which we live. Yeah. But, you know, a heart attack, he's not dropping out of the race. He's claiming that he's going to debate, which is next Tuesday.
He's driven by the power of his righteous rage.
Right.
Regardless.
Right.
His health's probably been failing this whole time.
Yeah. And look, there are, I think that it's just sort of like, it's one of those things where, like, you know, you never want to be having a heart attack during a campaign. If you're 60 and you have a minor heart attack, then I think people are sort of like, okay, well, that's, like, maybe not ideal, but, like, that's not, like, an abnormal thing that happens to men
of a
certain age. But it's, like...
It gets more concerning.
Right. And so it just sort of... It brings to the forefront...
He's old.
That he's old.
And so many of these people are too old. Right. All of them.
Right. Exactly.
Besides Pete Buttigieg, who's too young. Right. Everyone else is the wrong age.
Yeah. And look, I think that there are... I don't think that this is going to have, like, people, like, fleeing from his campaign, because...
Well, they're pretty hardcore. The people who have stuck with him are, like, not serious
business. I think what will potentially happen, and at least until we're sort of, like, able to see that he, like, at least looks fine, is that... I mean, I do think it's going to affect his poll numbers.
Oh, for sure.
I think it would be delusional to think that it wouldn't.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, he, much like Trump, has... You know, people, you know, I've even joked about it myself that I would vote for the ghost of Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
I would hope that I wouldn't have to choose to do that in this election cycle.
Correct.
But, you know, there are a lot of people in the party who are on the far left who feel that way.
Well, and that's
so
it. You're voting for
stay.
Him. You're not, it's, you know, there's an element of cult of personality around him, but there's also an element of, like, voting a platform.
Totally.
You know, there's a lot of people who vote for Bernie Sanders because he has this pure platform.
Yeah, yeah.
And those people don't care who's delivering the message.
They
trust him, so they care that it's him.
They don't care if that person is alive.
They don't care if that's an alive person or a dead person.
Right.
I think, you know, this will affect his polling numbers. A lot of those people will probably go to Warren, I would think. And that's what I saw happening anyway when it became clear that she was really going to be poised to actually be a real contender.
Yeah.
Because like Biden, Sanders is a sort of known quantity in a way that a lot of these other people were not. So it was always hers to gain and his to lose.
She had more room to grow.
She always had more room to grow.
Yeah.
Sanders and Biden both suffer from the fact that they came in as behemoths because we already all knew them.
Right.
And so there's always been that dynamic anyway.
Yeah.
But this is a kind of, it's exciting.
Yeah.
From a polling perspective.
Well, right. It'll be interesting.
It's too exciting if you're a member of the Sanders family. But,
I know. Yeah.
But it's certainly a bizarre, I mean, this is kind of what's interesting about elections.
Well, it's true.
Shit happens.
That's right.
All sorts of crazy shit happens during elections.
Yeah.
If you're Newt Gingrich, you can be bitten by a penguin.
That's right.
If you are, you know, you can have a sex scandal disrupt your
you can
run for office
stool.
If you're Herman, was it Herman Cain?
Yeah,
who had a sex scandal? Yeah. Godfather's Pizza, Herman Cain.
Yeah.
You can fall off a stool if you're Mitt Romney and you don't know how to sit properly on a stool because, quote unquote, you don't drink. Or if you don't know how to describe lemonade properly because you don't understand how to interact with human beings because your car elevator keeps them away from you. There's a lot of things that can happen in the course of an election.
Yeah.
And this is one of them.
That's right. But we hope Bernie's okay.
We certainly hope Bernie's okay.
Right.
Well,
and
we've been proponents of him staying in the race as long as humanly possible anyway.
Come on.
Because I think there's room for someone who's running on a platform that is a pure platform. I think a pure platform is a good thing to have.
Yeah.
In any case... but the DNC is panicking because Warren is still surging.
Right.
She's doing her slow, steady climb like we said she would. And her and Sanders were the top two fundraisers in the third quarter.
Yeah. I don't know why they're panicking about her, by the way. I have, like, I on some level, I sort of get it. But
she,
like,
plays ball with them, though.
I was going to say, that's the reason that, like, they should all be, like, getting behind her and stacked.
Yes.
Because it's like, she is a person who, I mean, I hope they get behind her silently because there were people on the left who would just be mad that they're getting behind her.
Right.
But, like... She's the answer to their problems.
She's the answer.
Right.
And she is not... Like, Sanders is a purist.
Right.
Warren plays ball.
Yes.
She's practical.
Yeah.
She's not someone who's going to come in and be like, the economy's going to fall. I'm going to make every rich person a poor person.
Right.
You know? Poorer than being so wealthy that right, you don't even know where all your money right, is. It's like, exactly. Who cares?
Yeah,
you know, the amount of poorer she's going to make them is not going to have an impact on their day-to-day lives in any respect, or their long-term lives in any respect.
I know.
She plays ball. Yeah. If they want to look for someone who can both have the kind of grassroots appeal that beats a Donald Trump and plays ball, Liz Warren is the answer. Bernie Sanders is not. I understand why Wall Street's not keen on Bernie Sanders being the president.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they're keen on any of these other moderate fools being the president, because those people don't seem to have anyone who wants to vote for them.
I know.
But, you know, and even when you're looking at the top fundraisers, it is notable to me that the top two fundraisers are both not taking corporate money, and one of them isn't even doing fundraisers. Liz Warren doesn't do fundraisers, you guys.
I know.
She just gets money. Sanders only does small dollar fundraisers, essentially.
Right, where you have to, like, pay to go see
him, but he raised $25.3 million. Yep. She raised $24.6 million.
Yep.
Buttigieg, who takes lots of big money, because he's now the sort of...
He is not shy about what
the money of, choice.
Not, not discretionary at all about what it's...
No. Right. But he only raised $19.1 million, and he's the new big money choice in the race.
Right, he is.
And the reason is because everyone's maxed out on their Biden contributions.
Right. He only raised $15.2 million, which is down from $22 million. Then there was Harris at $11.6 million. Yang, $10
million. It's like wild. God.
And then Booker, $6 million, which still, I think that there is something weird about... I don't know what's going on there, because we talked to you last week about, like, how he... I think on Sunday, when we were recording the podcast, like, had mentioned that, like, he had met, like, the donor threshold to, like, get into the next debate. And, like...
Right.
But he had, like, set that weird, like... I need to raise $1.7 million by the end of Q3 or else I'm going to drop out. And, like, up until the very, very near, like, dying moments of Q3, he was begging and pleading for money to, like, be able to stay in the race. And then, like, he announced that at the end of Q3, he had over three times the amount that he claimed that he needed to be able to stay.
It's so weird.
It's sort of weird. I mean, like, I'm glad that he's... staying.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, you know, I want to shoot him out of a cannon less than some of these bozos.
Well, then at least two of them.
I
mean, he's high on my list after he aggressively described himself as a moderate at that fundraiser with him.
Yeah.
Like, out of his way to describe how he's definitely not a guy who has any ideas or plans.
Yeah.
Don't worry, rich people. Yeah.
But you mentioned this briefly, but this is an insane stat that I came across today when I was, like, finding these fundraising numbers, because people were sort of, like, digging into, like, what happened to all of the Joe Biden money, because he raised $22 million last quarter, which was decent. It didn't win that quarter either, but I mean, like, it was like a reasonable amount of money for somebody to have raised. But so he dropped off $7 million, basically.
Right.
He went from 22 to 15, and apparently the reason why is because 38% of that $22 million from Q2 came from people who have maxed out. 38%. That's
so
almost $8 million.
Wild.
So there, that's where it went.
Yeah,
that's
we found the exact...
We found the $8 million.
I had a suspicion...
cannot give to him anymore.
That this would happen because...
Well, we've said
when
this.
He raised that big sum in his first week...
Right, and didn't have
$6
very many
million,
donors.
And there were like seven donors that raised $6 million somehow.
It was from like early, giant, large dollar fundraisers.
They had asked everyone to max out early. And I was like, that's fine if you expect to have momentum continuing forward.
Yeah.
But you can't have that be your strategy if you don't have anyone new to get
and
money
I get
from.
That strategy initially just to sort of
because
like
because you're supposed to look like you have a big number.
You're supposed to look like you have a big number. You need the money to run a giant campaign. So it's like, get the money.
Right.
But like, yeah.
It seemed like it was always his momentum to lose. So the fact that they had that much trouble even getting him an impressive figure and
he doesn't have a donor base. He's not going to be able to count on obviously the same people who are giving to, you know, because a lot of people are giving to, I've given to both Sanders and Warren.
I gave a few
dollars to Pete Buttigieg at one point. He's become my new Julia Brownlee because I'm getting 74 emails from him every single solitary day, and it's like driving me bonkers.
I also am mad. I've been mad at him now for so many months that I can't even with him.
But it's not surprising to us, although that number was shocking to me. Like, it's not ultimately surprising. I was just surprised that it was that high.
Well, it's like also once he's fundraising just above Harris,
I mean,
who's like sort of in the race, but not real. Like, that's embarrassing.
Also, she'll take your money too.
Anytime.
If you are the head of a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, she's not afraid to take your corporate money.
She'll take a check.
Yeah. No, none of these people from Warren down are shy about taking your check. Right. If you are a giant corporation or the head of a giant corporation or a person who wants a personal audience with them because you're rich and you think you deserve that, whatever it is.
Right.
If you will bundle money for them, they will take that money. They don't care where it comes from.
I would contend, and I don't have any proof to back this up, but speaking of Booker's money, if we're wondering how he got from worrying about 1.7 to getting all the way to 6. And
I know
doing
exactly
it in days,
where that money came from.
Well, I could tell you where that came from.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it didn't come from small dollar donations. No. He didn't make $4.3 million dollars from small dollar donations in the span of a week.
That's so true. You've never been righter. I also want to point out, just as a mathematical exercise, that $60 million of this money from the top 7 candidates is going to candidates who support Medicare for All.
Yeah.
That's way more than now I'm about to do some fast math, and that's a disaster. But there's at least $10 million more going to Medicare for All candidates. Probably more, if I did the math.
Right, because that's 50 between Sanders and Warren, and then Yang, 10.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's...
Good work.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I just wanted to point out that if you are a person who is thinking to yourself that the 3 candidates supporting Medicare for All are getting $10 million more than the 4 candidates who are all supposedly real people who are supporting the public option plan that the nation has now taken up our argument and done a long expose on why the public option is a dumb idea. So I definitely recommend you read that.
Oh, yeah.
I put it everywhere on social media. Yeah. But that's just a side note from me to you.
And lastly, before we get off the story, because this was another thing that surprised me, because you know, we talk a lot about how you can raise fast money from, these people who are maxing out. If you're wondering how many people had to give, so the most that you can give to one candidate is $2,700 in a primary. You can give $2,700 to them again in the general election. So you can give $5,400 in total. But right now we're only talking about $2,700 increments. To get to $8 million, you only have to have 2,800 people give you $2,700.
Yeah.
And as a person who does not do math, I thought that stat was incorrect.
I
pulled out the calculator app on my phone.
You had to.
But it's right.
You had
guys.
To pull out the
so
calculator.
So that is not very many people that you need. And when you're Joe Biden, you have $2,800. You have 2,800 people who would give you
$2,700. I just want to point out that they've gotten something 900,000 individual donations from the Sanders campaign. And almost 500,000.
I think they're over a million.
Are they over a million now?
I think so, yeah.
The last stat I looked. But I mean, we're talking about a million donations that have not maxed out have gone to the Sanders campaign. He's not even leading in the polls.
Right.
You know,
wherein over a third of Biden's money came from 2,800 people.
400,000 or 500,000 people have given to Liz Warren, and 2,800 people gave $8 million to Joe Biden and now can never give money again to him. It's just not it. It's not great.
No. It's not true.
Meanwhile, as a side story that is brewing in Washington right now that could, I think, become the secret story of Trump's undoing.
I think so,
if
too.
We play our cards right. We won't. We'd never get anything right. But
playing our cards right on this story is just shutting up, I think.
Yes, right.
Probably.
Yeah, everybody keep their mouths fucking shut.
Right.
Because.
Let the Republicans eat their own on this
one. Donald Trump pulled out of Syria over objections of just about everyone.
Yeah.
Because he loves palling around with Erdogan.
Yeah.
Lindsey Graham was furious. His BFF, Lindsey Graham. Steve Doocy on Fox and Friends was furious.
Lindsey Graham had the vapors over this one.
Exactly. Clutched his pearls even harder than the last time. Even Mitch McConnell came out pretty forcefully against this, which he never does. And Pat Robertson.
Oh, we have to read this Pat Robertson.
But read McConnell first.
We'll go in order. Yeah.
A precipitous withdrawal of U.S. forces from Syria would only benefit Russia, Iran, and the Assad regime. And it would increase the risk that ISIS and other terrorist groups regroup. That's from Mitch McConnell, a person who normally doesn't say anything.
Has never said anything bad about Trump since he took office.
Right.
Yeah.
Then Pat Robertson really went in. The president, who allowed Khashoggi to be cut in pieces without any repercussions whatsoever, is now allowing the Christians and the Kurds to be massacred by the Turks. The president of the United States is in danger of losing the mandate of heaven if he permits this to happen.
Ooh.
The mandate of heaven.
Yikes.
That's big.
That's huge.
You do not want to lose the mandate of heaven in Syria. That is so important. But I mean, this kind of rage is really unusual in this environment. And so I feel like this is I think I have a conspiracy theory about this. I'm going to share it with you because it's unfounded. And that's what we do in this world. I think so. I've said in the past that I think the Republicans need this impeachment thing to happen because they need cover.
Yeah,
because
they know he's crazy. Week.
They know it. A lot. Right? I mean, not and all of them, but enough.
And especially in another election year when there's all of these senators.
They're not trying to run with him at the top of the ticket like a bunch of fools. No, exactly. While they're like, trying to explain away why all this nonsense is going on.
Yeah, you think Cory Gardner wants to be running with Trump at the top of the ticket? All the seats that they could lose, or Joni Ernst, or any of these people,
in danger because of Donald Trump.
Yeah.
So they need something to happen.
Right.
They need a reason to turn on him that their voters won't blame them
for. Got it.
So they have the impeachment hearings happening. Everyone's a little on edge. And if they can just sort of pull this Syria thing and really make it a story, then they have both an imperiled president who's weakened because of the impeachment investigation and because he thinks he can impeach everyone who's against it.
He's lost the mandate of heaven.
He's lost the mandate of heaven, which is so important when you're the president. And has lost the support of several Fox and Friends anchors that he previously had enjoyed almost too much support from, as well as Lindsey Graham, his lapdog. I mean, this is a great time for them to be like, fuck this guy.
Yeah.
Because so what's happened here, we pull troops out of the Kurdish border regions in Syria basically because Turkey was like, we want that.
Right. And the Kurds have been a huge ally for us.
Right, because we're trying to fight ISIS and Assad. I mean, listen, are all allies in that section of the world
questionable
on some level?
Way?
Sure.
Yes.
And the Kurds aren't the greatest allies you could ask for, but they are our allies in that region because there are worse people out there.
Right.
On all sides of them.
Yes.
And so we've been aiding Kurdish forces to keep that border strong, to keep ISIS from being able to expand, to keep Turkey from, you know, Erdogan from being able to expand. Like, we've been aiding them in an effort to keep everyone else at bay. Pulling aid from them because Erdogan is mad about it.
Right.
Is, first of all, benefits Russian interests in the region for sure. Because Russia has had a long history in that region of also trying to, you know, garner natural resources in favor also using terrorist groups to their advantage and stuff like that. So, but it's also just like a reversal of the only strategy we had, the one that everyone had committed to. We had all just decided that was all we could do. You know, it's not great over there, but like, what can we do? This is what we could do. So now we're just sort of like doing nothing.
Right.
I guess letting the mandate of heaven take over as the, I don't know, but it is a dangerous situation that could definitely expand like it could expand our concerns with terrorism.
Yes.
Both
that's what everybody's concerned about
here and abroad.
Right. Yeah.
It's about ISIS.
Yeah.
It's about ISIS gaining more territory.
But he beat them. Remember?
But I forgot how he had beaten them.
Yeah.
And I think I forgot that because it wasn't true. I think sometimes I forget facts that aren't real facts.
Yeah.
Because you need room in your head for some other stuff.
Fair.
You know.
Yeah.
It's like sometimes you have to remember what flavors of ice cream are your favorite or whatever. You need to forget some of these facts. So in any case, with the mandate of heaven gone, it's anyone's guess what happens. But I feel like one thing that could happen is that Republicans could use this as an excuse to turn on him and get the hell out of there.
Yep.
Let's hope.
Yeah.
And in final news, New York State is not taking Trump's shit right now.
Love it.
So there's been, at the state level, some requests for tax records from Donald Trump that have been going on in New York State for a while now. And the Trump administration's been trying to give them the runaround in the courts so that they don't have to release their tax returns.
Right.
And here's the thing. If you're having to work this hard to not release your tax returns, there's definitely something in them. Right. So we know that we're going to find some exciting stuff.
Yeah.
But a federal judge just rejected Trump's most recent challenge to the request that he release his tax returns on Monday, saying that he could not grant a, quote, categorical and limitless assertion of presidential immunity.
Yeah.
And called the claim, that Trump's a claim, which in court they were arguing that he's immune from this because he's president.
Yeah.
He called that claim extraordinary.
Extraordinary. Yeah.
Obviously, they're going to appeal it because that's what they do.
Yeah.
But it is an exciting note. That's,
I know.
You know
we might finally get to see those.
I mean, I like with the whistleblower report, as soon as I knew it existed.
Right.
I hate when there's a document that sounds exciting that I don't have my eyes on right now.
Sure.
I want all of the documents that are in the ether.
Right.
But to also, be viewable like, by me.
In, you know, think of, this is another exercise where you can take a few minutes of your time, imagine all of the things that could potentially be in the Trump tax returns, and then you've done it.
Right.
Like, that's what's in there.
I mean,
there might be things even crazier than what you were able to think of.
Well, you might not know enough about tax returns, and especially about the development industry, to know what you could
but
expect.
But if you think to yourself, hey, could this be in the tax returns?
Yes, the answer is yes.
Could indeed be.
And not only...
and probably are.
Probably are. It's, common sense detective work is where we're at right now as a nation.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is always doing exactly what you think he's doing.
Yeah.
There is no ulterior motive. There is no secret conspiracy. It's all right out there. You can just know that if you think it's a thing that he might do, he is doing it.
Yes.
And that is unfortunately not enough to impeach a president.
I know.
It is enough.
It's like everyone's alarm over this whole Ukraine thing has just been like completely flabbergasting to me. Although I'm excited that everyone's finally on board. But it's kind of like, oh, so he's doing the same thing that he did already. And now you're just
extra mad
about it.
But he did it in secret this time. He did it on a secret call this time. So that's why it's bad. Instead of on Twitter.
Right. Or on our televisions.
On our televisions. Exactly. No, it's, I mean, part of it has been him attempting to normalize that kind of behavior, obviously, but part of it is also that when you've been allowing him to get away with it for so long, which is why I sort of called into question their desire to wait until the perfect scandal dropped into their lap, it makes everyone sort of be like, well, what's so bad about this? You know, like, it's going to be hard to explain to the American people why this in particular is bad.
That,
when
I think, is honestly
asking China to investigate.
That specifically in regards to impeachment, I think, is going to be the Democrats' challenge.
Yeah, and I don't think it needed to be.
And it's anyone's challenge, I think, whenever you're trying to impeach someone. Right,
of course.
If
you think about Watergate, it was so bizarre what Nixon was up to that how did you explain to everyone that that was what he was up to?
It's going
to
be the being able to tell a good and cohesive story.
Yeah.
I have concerns.
And I have concerns about Adam Schiff in particular's ability to do that, and also Chuck and Nancy's ability to tell any story with even with a convincing face.
I know
who's really good at theater.
I don't know.
In the House, and I mean Maxine Waters is good at theater, but that she's been calling for impeachment because she knew she could sell the story.
Right. Yeah.
She doesn't need this bullshit. I feel like
We need kabuki theater.
Yeah,
experts.
like somebody like a clown school needs to go in there. Like someone needs to really do some performance training with these guys. Because you need someone dynamic to tell this story. There needs to be someone charismatic at the lead of this. And
They're trying to do it in a very measured way, and that's not going to be
the way.
That's
not going to work, and Adam Schiff is not dynamic.
No.
There are dynamic people in the House. There's hundreds of people in the House. Some of them are very dynamic.
Right.
Not all of them are credible, but you don't need a credible person. You need a dynamic person.
Right.
And the same in the Senate. I mean, some of these people in the Senate are very slick.
Yeah.
Cory Booker could sell us this story.
Totally.
I have no... Like, he should be leading any sort of future impeachment probe any sort of impeachment hearing or removal from office hearing in the Senate, because he's a man who would tell us the story.
Right. Well, I think one thing that I think is going to be great, and I'm sure that this is a no-brainer, so I'm not clairvoyant on this one, but I'm excited to see what Liz Warren says at the debate.
Yeah.
Because you know that this debate is going to be heavy on where everyone's at on this whole scandal.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the first out of the whole lot of them to be there on impeachment.
Yeah.
So look for that.
That's going to be exciting.
Also look for Tulsi Gabbard, because she's going to be there.
Right.
Remember
that?
All 12 of them are going to be there. I'm a little concerned about her being there, actually, because that debate is going to be hogwash anyway, because there's going to be 12 of them there. So it's not even going to be
a meaningless.
It's going to be, but it's going to be more flame-throwing, I think, even so, just because
everybody... Well, and she really has nothing
be,
to lose at this point.
And that's kind of her thing, and it's going to be someone who potentially doesn't see it. Like, if I'm, a campaign manager on any of those campaigns, I'm, racking my brain as to what Tulsi Gabbard could be coming from me on.
Yes. For sure. Because the rest of them You've all been up debating each other this whole time.
Yeah.
Tulsi Gabbard is a wild card.
Yes.
She's the only wild card
and
who
is
a flamethrower.
This is the last time.
This is her last gasp.
This is the last time that you will ever see her.
That's right. Yeah.
Unless she does something that changes the narrative. But I mean, she will not qualify for the next debate.
No.
She can't.
She can't.
Actually, it's not going to happen.
No. So this is, she has to go out with a bang.
Yikes.
And it's going to be epic.
Yeah.
So on that note.
Yeah.
Debates ahead, impeachment ahead.
Yeah.
A lot going on.
Yep.
And we will be here tracking
for all of it.
The Twitter response as usual.
Yeah.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.